Today's episode of The Wretched Hive is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/hive. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to The Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Moss Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
It's Skype talk with the wretched hive. Hopefully this Skype connection will stay together. Come on, baby, hold together. We're having Skype issues tonight, but we don't care because you have found the Wretched Hive Podcast for Friday, September 2nd, 2016, episode 18 of the Wretched Hive Podcast. And we've got four-fifths of the gang with us tonight. Unfortunately, once again, Captain of the Millennial Falcon, Nico Rodriguez, will not be joining us tonight, but we do have my favorite Mon Calamari and yours, Greg Lent.
Who in God's name was that sexy, sassy voice going on there at the beginning of that podcast? Oh my God, I felt like I had to touch myself.
That would be a little awkward, actually, but because that was my wife.
What?
But, you know, that's all right. She is goddamn sexy.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry.
You know, that's fine.
Well, I'm not sorry. Maybe I'm a little jealous, but but yeah.
Well,
that's going to make things awkward over dinner conversation.
Greg, well, light out for this one. It's a hive after dark.
Well, don't worry. We'll be recruiting your wretched wives as well eventually, and I just won't be horning out over them. You know,
we'll see how that works.
Well, we'll see. We'll see, though. You never know. You never know. Catch me in the right mood. We also have lifelong Star Wars fan and huge fan of Jameson's, Scott Ivansky.
How the hell am I supposed to follow Greg after that? Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. This is going to be a great night, I can already tell.
I should have warned you.
You can always say that you have touched Steve's wife, but that might be even more awkward.
I'm just drinking the Jameson's. That's all I'm doing.
I think he's touched me more than he's touched Lisa, to be honest with you.
I have, you sexy beast.
I've got the bruises,
Steve,
to prove it.
We've all touched you more than your wife's touched you. Wow. I'm just saying.
Oh, wow. That's, this is going
to... Wow.
Where did this go? Man.
Oh, wow. Man. And I thought they smelled bad on the outside. I mean, come on. My God. And last but not least, we have Dave. Do not under any circumstances call him Harry Potter.
That escalated quickly. Wow.
See, we should never carry over into the show, the pre-show talk. That's the problem here. We've got to cut it off.
Take a cool down lap before we record next time.
Keep it clean. We got to keep it clean.
Family
show.
Get a cold shower or something. I mean, get a little... I'm sweating a little bit, guys.
I'm very excited to talk Star Wars. Dave,
keep that camera where it is, Greg.
My eyes are up here, guys. My eyes are up here. So, Dave, I don't want to cut you off, but are you guys ready for the update? The captain, are you ready for the update this week?
Yeah, what's going on with the captain?
Yeah.
So, we talked last week. He's got that cleaning job, right? So, he was called out to the high desert this week. Apparently, there's this group of, like, traitor midget people, I think. I'm not sure. They all wear, like, robes and everything. So maybe they're part of some cult or something like that. I don't really know. But they're all, like, little people. And apparently, there was a... You know, they cruise the desert just kind of looking for junk and everything like that. And apparently, from what we could gather, there was what looks to be a group of... rogue bandits.
Wow.
But the funny thing was, is like is like all of the death and destruction was very precise and very calculated. So it's a little mysterious as what's going on there. I'll have to check in with them later on because it sounds like there's some conflicting stories going on as far as what happened to these poor little fellas.
Don't they usually travel in single file to hide their numbers out there?
Yeah, and they were all the tracks were side by side. It was totally weird. It was totally weird.
Did you say there were midgets in robes?
Midgets in robes. Yes, midgets in robes.
Is Kenny Baker their messiah already, or what's the deal with that?
There's a Kenny Baker cult, and I'm not in it. There's something wrong.
The sound only travels if it's if it's up below 4 feet. So you got to get down on your knees to hear the call.
Oh. It wouldn't be the first time for him.
Oh man! Here we go.
Kenny Baker, Mini-Me, and Tyrion Lannister walk into a bar.
And nobody notices.
Oh, my God. I almost did a spit take on that one, guys. Dave, you can't start a joke when I'm in mid-drink.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. All right.
But anyway, we look forward to his return from the high desert. Hopefully, that is within 2 weeks. We'll find out.
All right.
Or maybe the adventure will continue. We'll see.
He's really doing a lot of interesting jobs. He was crime scene investigator a couple weeks ago. And
this is part of that same job. Yeah, crime scene cleanup is what it is.
Say that a few times fast. All right.
It's all this goddamn Patsy I've been drinking. It's
Want to talk to us about crime scene cleanup or clean crime scene up or whatever Greg said, you can leave us a voicemail, 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. And chances are extremely good that your voice message will get on the air. So there you go. You can also find us on Facebook, by the way, facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. And there's lots of fun posting there. Scott, you were posting a few things this week. I think you post the Jar Jar Rogue One mashup.
That was so brutal. Oh my God, I actually got scared that somebody did a really good job on that. That's all.
It is so funny.
I'm glad you put that up there because I really wanted to touch on that just ever so briefly because I thought that was really, really, really fun. Really enjoyed that one.
We can definitely talk about it. I posted two other videos. One of them, hands down, almost made me cry, and it in incorporated prequel material, and it just made the prequels look so much cooler than they actually are.
Oh, we've got some prequel talk, some stuff about some cool looking prequel talk later when we talk about this trailer that hit for the prequels, sort of rebutting the idea that the prequels were bad. Some people love the prequels, and this movie's coming out all about how great the prequels are. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, there is a movement out there, definitely.
That's right.
It's all these goddamn millennials.
But guys, before we get to that, I am so excited. We are debuting a new segment this week, and I've been talking this up offline with you guys. Just want to say, first of all, you guys have no idea what's coming. Right.
Yeah, this is a mystery. Right. I'm excited.
No preparation at all. This segment was suggested by one of our fans, guys. And I said, "Listen, this is so funny. There's so much potential."
Wait a minute. Let me guess. Was it Scotty McDonald?
Well, 33% of the time you're going to be correct, but in this particular case, it was not Scotty McDonald.
But we still love you, Scotty.
I said to this this fan who shall be not be named, I said, I gotta give you credit for this. This is really funny. He goes, no, I don't want any credit. I don't want any blame either. But
that's the best
just
part.
Run with it. And so this is an idea that was suggested by a fan. We're going to run with it. This is a segment called Star Wars Choices. It's a little game we like to call Star Wars Choices.
Think of a hard choice you'll face in the near future. choose, choose.
Okay, would you rather be intimate with a Wookiee?
Choose wisely.
Or be intimate with Princess Leia in the gold bikini, but it's the modern day Carrie Fisher?
I just assumed it's a Wookiee.
Star Wars choices on the Wretched Hive podcast. Our first Star Wars choices game. We have an interesting choice. So here's how the game goes, guys. You guys have to make a choice. I'm going to give you two options and you have to choose one. You got to stick with it forever. This is your choice, the choice you made. And there's no going back. So you're going to be stuck with whatever choice you made for the rest of your life and certainly the rest of this podcast. So here's the first choice for week one of Star Wars choices. Would you rather remove Jar Jar Binks from the Star Wars universe completely? Or remove Hayden Christensen's Force Ghost from the end of Return of the Jedi? We are going to start with Dave Potter.
It's got to be Jar Jar.
You would rather remove Jar Jar. Jar Jar.
I mean, and just if for no other reason than it makes no sense to me to remove the Hayden Christensen Force Ghost without removing Hayden Christensen altogether. Like, that would just be a little, that would just be jarring to me.
Well, why couldn't you put Sebastian Shaw's ghost back in?
Because it doesn't look like what Hayden Christensen looked like when he became Darth Vader. I get why Lucas did that.
So you're okay. One of those people. You're one of those people who is on board with the Hayden Christensen because that was the last true Anakin Skywalker, is what you're saying.
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that. I'm just saying, given that choice, that's the choice I'm making, and that's my justification for it.
Okay.
If it was a different choice, perhaps there would be a different answer.
All right. Greg Lent.
I'm going to remove Hayden from the end of Jedi. I will Hater. Leave Jar Jar
Hater.
As is through the entire it's my turn to talk. My turn.
But he's so dreamy. He's so dreamy though, Greg.
I think there was no it's like making Ewoks blink. There's no reason to take Sebastian Shaw out. He already has so little screen time as it is. Hayden just stands there and nods and does nothing else. So let's take him out, leave Jar Jar exactly where he is, annoying as he may be, and let's put Sebastian Shaw back where he should be amongst
All right.
the Force greats of Kenobi and Yoda. Or Kenoda, as they are known collectively.
Kenoda.
This is, first of all, this is be all, end all. I can't go back on any of this.
No, you need to decide right now.
Well, whoever came up with this game, screw you. I don't know. I'm going to argue with you right now. Wow.
Because if there's one thing that Scott does, it's waffle out about his decision 5 minutes after it's made.
That's right. I have that right, damn it. I can flip-flop all I want to.
No flipping or flopping on this one. You're stuck right. with this choice.
Well, I'm going to say that both Dave and Greg make great points. And as tough as this is, seriously, this is tough. This is a tough decision right here, people. Yeah. As much as I like to see Sebastian Shaw in the end of Return of the Jedi, he is in the final moments unmasked with Luke, which are still great and have not been altered other than the eyebrows. But I will say, I want Jar Jar out of this thing. He completely destroyed any semblance of decency out of those prequels. I mean, he really did. And if I have to look at that stupid, smirking Hayden Christensen for 30 seconds on screen and remove Jar Jar from all of Phantom and Attack of the Clones and even Revenge of the Sith, I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
Wow. All right. So two Jar Jars, one Hayden. I'm going to make it even, guys. I take out Hayden. I go back to Sebastian Shaw. It bugs me. It bugs me looking at Hayden at the end. Jar Jar doesn't bug me as much as Hayden does.
What the fuck? What?
You know what? I've become. I'm okay with Jar Jar. I can't explain it really, but he's an important character in episode one. You know, he's all throughout that movie. He's clearly there for the kids. But why is Hayden there? Hayden is there to sell more DVDs. It just doesn't make any sense to me that they would take out, you know, Vader looked like Sebastian Shaw when he died. He did not look like Hayden Christensen.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and Scott, I got to go back to your comment for just a second there. And so what you're saying is Jar Jar, as terrible as his performance may have been in episode one, ruined all three movies when he is barely in episodes two and three at all. He ruined all three of those movies for you?
Oh, absolutely. There is no doubt about that.
The stink of Jar Jar is very, very strong, and it carries over time and space into those other films.
Seriously, Greg, go back and rewatch. Watch Attack of the Clones. Watch, I dare you to watch Attack of the Clones again. And the minute that punk ass Gungan walks on screen, it just crushes everything. Does Hayden's performance do it? Yeah. That whole sand grain gets coarse and in my pants nonsense is ridiculous. But the minute that stupid CGI character walks through Padme's apartment, I have never wanted to physically punch a screen as hard as I ever. That moment right there. That guy. What a complete douche move on George Lucas's part. Seriously.
I want a t-shirt that says punk ass Gungan. I'm just saying.
I could not disagree more. Hayden sucks so much air out of my entire being just by speaking in episode two at all. It totally makes me long for the performance of Jar Jar Binks in episode one watching Hayden.
Wow. I'm going to argue this point even more.
That is strong.
I disagree with you. As much as I hated him in Attack of the Clones and as whiny as he can be, that end sequence with him and Ewan McGregor in Revenge of the Sith is really...
That's an entirely different movie. It's an entirely different movie.
We're talking the prequels, my friend, and I can bring up that...
No, you're talking... I'm talking episode two versus episode one. He is so bad in episode two, way worse than Jar Jar is in episode one.
Okay, good point.
Yes, and I will agree with you. His grace is the lightsaber fight in episode three. He did very good, but I could practice for 6 months with a sword master and do just as good a job.
I want to time you out.
Time out, okay.
So, let's
Matt, you did the. For those of you not listening along at home, yeah. We had the timeout sign go. Like, shut up.
Yeah, Scott, you do have to remember this is an audio medium here. So,
giving me
visual cues is not good for the listeners.
All right, well here it goes. I'm gonna go toe to toe, Jar Jar versus Hayden in Attack of the Clones, just for you, my friend, and. Hayden clearly is in this movie quite a bit more than Mr. Jar Jar Binks. So the, 15 minutes or less of Jar Jar where he walks through Padme's apartment and the stupid Senate sequence that he's in there, which basically sets off the entire Clone Wars. Holy crap, clusterfuck balls right there, my friend. Then you can talk about
him. Less than 15.
Wait, second. There is one redeeming moment. There is one redeeming moment with Hayden in Attack of the Clones. Yes, I agree with you 100%. He is complete crap in that film. Oh, man, if he's really ever listening to this, I feel really bad. I'm sorry, Mr. Hayden Christensen, but you are complete crap in that film, except that moment where he has to
kill. Love to shatter glass, though.
Hang on, Hayden. Hayden wants to weigh in here. Hang on one second.
It's coarse. Rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere.
gets everywhere.
I
Scott.
Don't like son that. Of a bitch.
My ears are bleeding just listening to that. Bleeding, Scott. Bleeding.
Greg, I am with you on that. My ears are bleeding too. And it gets worse. There's the whole stupid thing with Obi-Wan made me do it. I'm a poor whiny. Oh, God. He makes Luke look like freaking De Niro in this film.
Hang on. If we're gonna, we don't have a sound cue played up, but I think, you know, we'll just let Jar Jar Binks speak for himself a little bit, because I'm pretty sure he says things like, oh, when Gungans get scared, we go to sacred place. Come, Misa, show you. Come on. 10 times worse than anything you can put out there by anybody else,
Dave,
including the damn Ewoks.
Dave, let's throw in at least a Jar Jar Attack of the Clones reference. Ooh, Annie, you go so big! Yay!
You know, that just makes me uncomfortable. Like, it's almost sexual predator-ish.
Seriously. And yeah. Even a big flowing robe, too.
Yeah,
you know something creepy's going on there.
I know it's not an old guy in a desert watching a kid grow up, but it's like a... alien running across an apartment to hug somebody he knew as a small boy.
Well, wait, just see, 1 second. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay, so that character is written to be annoying. Mission accomplished. He's annoying. You know, he bugs the crap out of everybody. He is the C-3PO of the prequels, even though C-3PO was in the prequels. He is the one that's supposed to be annoying and bug everybody. Hayden Christensen, you're supposed to like guys, and everybody wants to throttle that little shithead every time he's on the screen.
Now, I agree with you, but again, my agreement is going to go about 90% because there was a moment in Attack of the Clones which absolutely just should have been every part of his performance through that movie. It's the moment where he goes to seek revenge on the Tusken Raiders. Those moments with him, his mother dying, and then the slaughter is just insane. Great. It's short, but it should have been everything else. The grain, the sand, the really awkward, creepy holding hands with Padme on the balcony, making out sequence. Ooh, that's kind of date rapish. I'm sorry. It's kind of creepy.
Well, great, Scott. All we have to do is cut all of his dialogue and we've got that performance.
But see, you can cut all of Jar Jar's out. That would be, everything would be great. You know what they should have done? Let me go into this full on, man. Here we go. Jar Jar could have been completely erased. We don't need an annoying character. We've got Lucas's whole world, which is somewhat annoying. In the prequels, you just add Captain Tarples. What a great Gungan character. He could have led that whole sequence. And, oh, my God, that guy was so much cooler than Jar Jar. But no.
Scott, what would Star Wars be without this?
Well, that smells stink-a-whiff.
There you go.
Why are you killing me, man?
All right, so the Wretched Hive, we're going to have to settle for a tie on this one.
All right.
2-2.
No, I think what we need somebody needs to get out on the bat phone to Nico, and Nico's going to have to call the Hive line and be the tiebreaker on that one. So I'll reach out to him and tell him we need a tiebreaker. So I'll have him call into the line and we can play that maybe in 2 weeks and get it. So we're going to – so same bat time, same bat channel. 2 weeks from now, we'll get a decision on that.
All right. Sounds good. In the meantime, we've got lots of other news, guys.
From ABC News World Headquarters – this is ABC World News Tonight.
No, it's not. It's Star Wars news with the Wretched Hive.
So be it.
Well, The Force Awakens is awakening again. Yeah, Lucasfilm Disney is releasing The Force Awakens on 3D Blu-ray. This from MakingStarWars.net, reporting that fans can fully immerse themselves in The Force Awakens through breathtaking 3D, new bonus features, and collectible packaging. So, guys, who's ready to... you ready for another copy of The Force Awakens in your home? Are you going to hold off, or are you going to run out and get this?
Nah, the legacy...
Yes!
But that's what they do to us, right? I mean, how I've got... Right now, in my home, I've got the DVD of all 6 movies. I've got all DVDs. I've got the Blu-ray box set. I recently purchased the iTunes version. possibly because I needed some good audio for this podcast. and that's all within like the last 2 years, probably. Maybe not the DVD, but certainly the Blu-ray and the iTunes version within the last within the last year or two.
Please, so, you know, do not get me started on the versions and copies that we have in our garages and boxes, because it will get insane.
Yeah, I think we, at this point, at 18 episodes into the podcast, we've all unzipped our virtual trousers to show the size of our Star Wars movie collections. And I think Scott wins, but
yeah, no doubt.
Dave being
no doubt.
A close second. But you know, I had two versions of the Laserdisc. I had a VHS copy. I had three DVD copies, and I did not buy the Blu-ray. That was where I finally put my foot down, as I did not buy the Blu-ray.
Well, you guys were helping me pack up my house when I showed you the collector's edition box set VHS that I have, which I still have, because I'm pretty sure that the fourth making of Star Wars VHS has never been released in another format, and I can't bring myself to part with it until I know for sure that I can get that content somewhere else.
That is why I have the ultimate crappy VHS first version ever released, which is the only theatrical version, and I will go on record as saying this, version of the film, because if you bought the DVD or if you bought the Blu-rays, you do not own the theatrical version of The Phantom Menace at all.
Scott, listen to me right now. Horse shit.
Ah, I'm telling you. They're out to get us, man.
The third was, I think it was the third DVD release of episode 4. The bonus disc was the original theatrical release of episode 4 without episode 4 in the title and everything.
No, I'm gonna stand corrected on this. I mean, I'm gonna stand my ground on this, Greg. I didn't say episode 4. I said episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Then you're correct. I take back that. There you go.
I know which one you're talking about, though. I know exactly what you're talking about on episode 4. They put out that 1 year where they put out a bonus disc, which was the unanamorphic widescreen, which still chaps my fucking ass, Lucas.
Yeah.
You hear me?
Yeah, they did.
I'm coming
for you. They didn't clean them. They didn't clean them up at all. Yeah.
That conversation was basically, oh, yeah, if it's an African swallow, I agree with you, but I'm talking about a European swallow. Oh, right, yes.
Lots of Python references. This, I love it. It's good. Woo. It's good. Well, in this new set, what's exciting about this is, again, MakingStarWars.net reporting the exclusive 4-disc 3D Collector's Edition contains the original theatrical release on Blu-ray, Blu-ray digital HD and DVD, along with originally released bonus features, and brand new bonus material, including additional deleted scenes, behind-the-scenes conversations with cast and crew, and revealing never-before-released audio commentary by director J.J. Abrams. Now, that would be interesting for the show.
See, that's the one thing, honestly, that will probably get me to buy it, because I have listened to J.J. Abrams' commentary tracks before, and they're really, really good.
Yeah. Did we miss our calling, guys, by not recording our audio commentary track first? Did we miss our calling? We were supposed to do that, and I think I don't think we did.
Yeah, I don't think we've missed our window, though. I think we could put that out at any time. It's just getting us all together in the same room to do it.
I think we're still good. I'm with you on that, Dave. Let's do it before we get episode 8.
Oh, episode 8 or Rogue One?
No, episode 8. We're good. Rogue One's
okay,
that's different.
Good. That gives us a good a year and a half, so that's good planning, Scott.
I think actually that's a really good timeline, so we'll get that out for Ep 7 first before Ep 8. I like it.
Excellent.
Good call. All right.
I'm seriously excited about it. I know we've talked about it. I really want to hear us as a commentary track.
So what we're all saying is, grudgingly, we're all going to go buy it again.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was a damn audio commentary, son of a bitch.
But you know what? I've got some choice words for Mr. J.J. Abrams. It bugs me that he waited to do this. This is a total Lucas move. It does bug me.
We all knew it was coming, though, right? Is anybody surprised? Nobody's surprised, right?
Well, no, I'm a little surprised just because it's under the Disney umbrella now, and you don't I don't think, at least, I'll stand corrected if I'm wrong. I don't think they do this with any of their other properties. I mean, I don't think there's a, you know, Captain America Civil War Blu-ray coming out in 2 weeks, and then 6 months after that, there'll be the extra special Captain America Civil War because we were just messing with you, Blu-ray. Yeah.
I would like to touch on this visual.
Yeah, effect. Scott, do you want to go first, Scott? Because I'll go next.
Let's go. A lot of touching references tonight. I'm a little uncomfortable.
Oh, we're Greg, so going to touch
gonna
you.
We're going to tag team this month. Here's how it works. Yes, I do agree with you slightly, Dave. However, Disney is notorious for doing this thing called timeless classics, where they just put their movies away, and everything they have is a timeless classic. And it'll come out every 10 years, and we have the new special Diamond Edition or whatever. However, this is Star Wars. It's a new property they own, just like the Marvel stuff, and any movie that makes $2 billion, I'm pretty sure Disney's like, yeah, go ahead and do whatever you want. If you're going to put another $500 million to $1 billion on my plate, yeah, you're cool. Yeah,
the timeless classic business plan,
yeah,
I think kind of works for them because there's usually a new system, a new delivery system for the content by the time the window rolls around again. So they can legit say like, oh, you know, it's been 10 years since Aladdin came out, and it was only ever out on DVD. So now this is the first time it's out on Blu-ray, and you need to buy it. And yeah, 10 years from now, it'll be the first time to get it holographically streamed into your eyepiece or whatever the hell the technology is then.
Yeah, I was gonna reiterate exactly what Scott said. That Disney wrote the book on double dipping.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't just, you know, they went from theatrical releases to VHS releases to Laserdisc releases to DVD. There have been multiples of each. There was always a bare basic version of Aladdin, and then the Diamond double disc version of Aladdin that came out after that. And it's been that way with every single movie they've ever released. They, you know, as much as we harp on Lucas, they wrote the book on it. They really set the blueprint. They have mastered it, beginning with their theatrical releases. I mean, they would re-release it year after year after, well, not year after year after year, but I, you know, there would always be like a 6 to 7 year gap, and then it would come back to the theaters, and it would be out in theaters again, and it was always the same thing. And so now, when they do release their movies, they tell you it's for a limited time only, and you're never going to get it again until the next time they release it, and then you're never going to get that one again.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. In fact,
Disney marketing machine to a T.
I know quite a few of us, if not all of us here, are fans of BoxOfficeMojo.com, but who I do follow a lot for all my stats and stuff. But if you look at any one of the Disney films, any Disney film on that list of like top 200, 300, 400, 500 movies of all time, you will always see a little asterisk next to a Disney film saying that it's been multiple releases over time, much like Star Wars, Avatar, some of the big movies that have been re-released. But every single Disney film has been multiple released in the theaters, let alone on every format available.
Well, speaking of a multiple release, I'm just going to go off topic real quick because I saw a news article about this. There is a re-release coming scheduled for next year on August 29th, 2017. Apparently Cameron is going to re-release in 3D remastered Terminator 2. To celebrate the anniversary of Skynet going live.
Oh, is that the actual Judgment Day?
That's the actual Judgment Day.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
I love that.
And I will be in the theater to see that.
Oh, I'm there with you. I'll buy the popcorn.
That was like that's like earlier this year when the Back to the Future 2 parties were going on, because it was the year that Marty traveled forward in time.
That's right.
I love that stuff.
2015. Yeah.
Yeah. October 2015. That was good.
Well, let's talk about what Disney does well. Disney innovates. This next story, really super cool. Disney files a patent for next-gen Star Wars lightsabers that can deflect lasers. Okay, so this is an attraction, apparently, that they're wanting to build. This is on InsideTheMagic.net reporting or asking, have you ever dreamt of being able to wield a mighty lightsaber and have it actually respond to laser beams coming at you? Well, get in line. Fulfilling a lifelong dream of Star Wars fans everywhere, Disney has filed a patent that seemingly is able to reproduce the kind of movie magic only previously associated with Jedi. So the patent reads, an entertainment environment has a user with a faux lightsaber that interacts with a drone flying through the air or operated with hidden rods to appear as if it's flying through the air. The faux lightsaber has LEDs attached thereto to provide infrared light to the drone. As the LED light is turned on, an invisible light sensor built into the drone captures the image of the field of view with a bright spot. A visible light source built into the drone then projects light through the particulate matter in the air towards the faux lightsaber. So basically, this is going to be an attraction that you get handed a lightsaber and you're deflecting laser bolts that are coming at you. Sign me up.
Take my money.
Yeah, I would assume that this is something that they're at least planning on putting in the parks in Anaheim in Florida. I would assume it's something because, you know, they have the, at least in Anaheim, and I'm sure there's something similar in Florida, but in Anaheim they have Buzz Lightyear in Disney, and they have the Toy Story ride in California Adventure, both of which use, you know, the I think it's just infrared for target shooting during the ride. So it's like right. It's like the old fashioned shooting arcades, except you're on a ride situation. So I would assume this lightsaber thing would be something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you guys.
I am beyond excited. When I saw that article, I literally jumped out of my chair, because any kind of a realistic simulation of a lightsaber, that's something I have wanted since I was a little kid. And yeah. I will, if that's going on a ride, like you say, Greg, I will buy the annual pass right now. Christine doesn't get a vote. That is happening.
I'm with you on that, Dave. Right around the time Return of the Jedi came out, so what was that, 1983, May of 83, I have relatives on the East Coast, and I went back there, and they live up in the hills in Pennsylvania, beautiful country back there. But one of the things was it's a small town far away from big cities with big stores to buy all the toys and stuff. So my cousin and I back there would actually find the right size tree branches and knock those things down, do a little woodwork, shave those things down nice and smooth, sand them, and then spray paint them green and red like Luke and Vader, and we'd have full-on lightsaber battles. To have an actual working lightsaber, for the most part, yeah, sign me up. I'm good. I'm solid.
How many plastic extendable Star Wars or lightsabers do you think you've owned?
27.
27, okay.
37.
Yeah.
37. I'll see your 37 and raise you. Yeah, I mean, we still have at least 10 in the backyard. I mean, you know, on the side yard. They're just out there. We the family would come over. We have big Star Wars battles in the backyard with them.
There was a Clerks moment there, and I did want to point that out. However, I do want to say that the extendable lightsabers were great, but the moment you could go to Toys R Us or Kmart or any of those places and buy for not too much more, a little bit, the actual lightsabers that light up and hum, those were awesome. Who was the company that did that? Was that
it Master must have been Hat? Oh, you mean the one with the static blade that didn't collapse at all? Because Hasbro or somebody made another one that had a little switch on it with a spring-loaded blade, and that made noise as well and lit up.
No, this is the one that already existed. It was a clear tube, okay. And when you hit the switch on the saber hilt, it would the blade would light up, but it wouldn't just turn on. It would light up like the sabers did in the movies.
Yeah, those are cool.
It was like Master Effects or Master something.
There's a few of those that are out there now. I think the last WonderCon we were at in Anaheim, one of the vendors, he had a selection of 20 different hilts, and you could choose your blade color. It was really kind of cool, and not too expensive. These, because I think the ones you're talking about, those are, I think you can get them, and I know that there's companies out there that are from $100 to several hundred dollars for those, but the ones at WonderCon were pretty decent, and they were only like $60 or something like that.
Yeah, that's the one. Those are the ones I'm talking about. Yeah, I know that the higher end quality ones were up over the in you know, $100 to, like you said, several hundred.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there were ones that were around $60-$70 or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of those that are out there now because there's so much going on. You know, they do sound effects, and like you say, the blades, when you turn them on, it's not just turning a flashlight on. The light actually travels up the tube, so it looks like the blade's extending from the tube. There is what it looks like.
It's awesome.
Really cool. Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah.
Funny side note story. I just want to say that one of – it might have been – was it the Comic-Con that I went to with you, Greg, that we were in Hall H – did we ever make it to Hall H on that Comic-Con trip?
You and I did not. I think we got into one of the other halls to see the Mythbusters panel. I think that was the biggest hall we got into.
Okay, then it must have been the previous one, which was 2007, was the first time, and I really wish I would have recorded this, in Hall H, some Star Wars event was going on, and I remember sitting there, and what is that? That holds about 6,500 people.
Yeah, something like that.
And every person in that hall had a lightsaber, light-up lightsaber in there. I'll never forget the PA operator was like, could you please turn off all lightsabers before the presentation? And to see 6,000 people with lightsabers waving them in the air was damn fun.
That's awesome.
A celebration in Anaheim last year in 2015 was like that, too. The main hall was 4,000 or 5,000 people, and there must have been 2,000 or 3,000 with lightsabers. It was really cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah, really neat. Well, guys, wanted to talk about this documentary mentioned at the top of the show. Birthmoviesdeath.com is reporting on this trailer called The Prequel Strike Back. Did you have a chance to check this out?
I did.
Okay.
I would watch this in a heartbeat. I'm looking forward to this.
Very interesting. I'm going to play a little bit for those of you that haven't seen it. It's just about a 2-minute trailer. Maybe not play the whole thing, but check this out. This is the official trailer for the movie. It's coming soon. The prequel Strike Back, A Fan's Journey.
Context and expectation was stacked against George from the very beginning. There's no accounting for that kind of buildup. That more than 20-year gap between the beginning of Star Wars and the re-beginning with the prequels.
You see a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, you are ready. You've been waiting for this movie since you were 3 years old watching that tape of Star Wars. And then the movie starts.
And I hated it, the way it looked. And it was like kind of this sadness went over me, and I was like, oh no.
If a Star Wars movie were like an asteroid or a meteor, then the Phantom Menace would be the kind that killed the dinosaurs.
Expectations were unrealistically high.
You're going to see a generation of kids,
Kevin Smith,
that grew up watching the prequels that didn't feel the same way that we did. You know, we're just the loudest voice in the room.
But when you see like Mike Klimo's Ring Theory stuff, when he's putting these images side by side, there's no way that that's accidental.
So it creates this pattern of ABC, CBA.
You start looking for psychological meaning, you start looking for symbolism, and once you start looking for it, it's everywhere.
But we actually did more miniatures for the prequels than were done in the original films. There were that many miniatures done on those movies.
Nobody hates Star Wars like a Star Wars fan.
If you don't like them, there's always Star Trek.
It's so over the top.
So I got the thing.
Oh, shoot, cut it off. Well, that looks like a lot of fun. That was almost the whole thing. But the prequels Strike Back, A Fan's Journey, looks like a really interesting watch. And looks like it's coming out October 6th in Austin, Texas for the debut.
Well, for me, if I lived in Austin, I would go see this movie in the theater. I totally would. And for me, I think I've gone on record as saying, aside from episode 2, which I think is the worst of the...
Yes. Preach it.
Of all 7 movies now.
Preach it.
I think episodes 1 and 3 are still better than Return of the Jedi. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I can't agree with you on that.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
I will support Revenge of the Sith being better than Return of the Jedi, but I can't support Phantom Menace being being anywhere but immediately above Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. No, the lightsaber fight in Phantom Menace is better than any lightsaber fight we've seen in any of the movies, hands down.
And yet the movie's still awful.
Yeah, I don't know if that saved it. Nice. I don't know if the lightsaber battle saves that. However, this trailer looks fascinating, and I definitely want to see this movie. Great quote in there is, nobody hates Star Wars more than a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Love that. That is brilliant and so true. It's clear case with us, even as fans, how much we have just torn apart the prequels and still have a love for them in some sense. There are redeeming factors, I think, in each one of them. But even Kevin Smith and the point of what you're hearing in that trailer is great. There is a divide. There are people that grew up with it, and there are us, the loudest ones in the room, the older fans that have been here since 77. And I couldn't agree more. There was such an anticipation for those movies. I'll never forget going to the theater. I took my wife at the time, who I was dating at the time, to go see The Waterboy, to go see this trailer. And I think that could have been a defining moment in our relationship where it said, maybe I shouldn't date this guy anymore because he's going to see a movie to see a trailer. And it's freakishly weird how obsessed he is with this trailer. Like, I almost cried when I saw that trailer because it was exciting. That first Phantom Menace trailer was exciting
as hell. That trailer was great, too.
It's still.
It's a great trailer.
I would argue that is the best movie trailer I have ever seen in my life, because I can still watch that trailer today, and my reaction is always, you know, maybe that movie's not as bad as I remember it.
Right, yeah, right. And watch the movie. I know. But yeah, that was that thing. It was like, it was, they say it in the trailer. They say 20 years, but I think it was more like, was it 22 years? 16. I'm sorry, 16. Yeah. So there's that feeling of, you know, we walked in and it's like, what the hell just happened? In fact, I said that and I'm like, I have to go back and make sure I didn't see this wrong. And I went and saw that movie again and again. And then I saw the digital DSP version up in, I think it was Burbank, in one of the four theaters that were playing it in full digital at the time. I still have my movie ticket from that. It was a special ticket that you had to get encased in some like envelope or whatever sent from Lucas. It was great. And at that point, I'm like, wow, I just spent a lot of money on this film and it's not that good. It took a lot to realize it. 5 times in the movie theater, but holy crap.
You know, I had a very similar experience. I think the movie that I went to see the trailer for was Meet Joe Black for some reason. I don't know why I think that, but
yeah, that's right. That is correct.
That pops in there. And then that was a big day for me when the movie came out. I graduated from an internship program, and it's just one of those days that I had a lot of things happen, and Star Wars came out, and I waited in line 7 hours with friends. And then I was sort of like numb coming out of it. You know, they were all kind of making fun of me like, oh, that movie was horrible. I'm like, oh, it wasn't that bad, you know? And I got up the next morning, took the day off work and saw it the next morning again, you know, first show. And there's not too much you can say. I mean, it was innovative. It was cool. The lightsaber fight, no doubt. You know, saved the movie from just being a complete piece of crap. But it's grown on me over the years. Actually, I think I like it more now than I did back then. But I agree. I don't think it's better than Jedi, Greg. That's a pretty bold statement. But I'd like to hear more about that. Well, you're just pissed because Han Solo gets whipped in Jedi. That's your argument, I can tell you right now.
Wait. He is whipped in Jedi. You're completely correct on that. But do we need to take a quick time out and just go around the horn and like
do what our ranking of the movies is real quick, so we all have gone full kimono on this? Do we need to do that, or should we?
Several times, but I think we've done this at least once, but I'm happy to do it again. I'll lay it out right now for me. So it's 5, 4, 7, 3, 1, 2, 6. Hmm. Or 3, 1, 6, 2. I'm sorry, 3, 1, 6, 2.
You're going top to bottom, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So starting with 5.
Right.
Empire. And then 4, New Hope. Mm-hmm. And then 7, Force Awakens.
Right.
Yep. Okay.
And then Revenge of the Sith, 3.
Yep.
And then Phantom Menace.
Nope.
And then Jedi. And then Attack of the Clones.
See, I would agree with that, except I flip Jedi and Menace.
See, we're not that far off.
Yeah, I actually have the same. Mine would be 5, 4, 7, 3, 6, 1, 2.
And my honest argument on that, and if I'm rehashing territory, I apologize, but I actually feel like Return of the Jedi became a better movie for me after I saw Revenge of the Sith. Like, there was a bookending element that works better for it.
Yeah, I'm that same way. I'm 5, 4, 7, and then I do 6, 3. And the 6, 3, I want to just point out, they are so close together, but 6 just edges it out. There are serious problems with 6, but 3 is still part of the prequels. And there's just too much Jar Jar.
So wait, Greg.
He doesn't even speak in 3. Hang on.
So Scott, you're
you know, like Jar Jar Binks in 3 is like the dick pic in Fight Club. You know, he's like literally like one frame. And Scott's like, nope. No.
Jar Jar Binks in 3 is like Kevin Costner in the big whatever that was, the big. God, I'm blanking on the name of the movie. Yeah, The Big Chill, where he's just like the foot of his corpse is in it. I mean, it's nothing.
And that destroyed that movie for me. Oh, man.
So you go, Empire, A New Hope. What did you say? You said 5, 4, 7.
Yep. Force Awakens.
Right.
Return.
Okay.
Revenge.
Uh-huh. 1, 2.
Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones is the worst.
Okay. Alright.
Yeah.
Well, we're all on board with Attack of the Clones being in the cellar.
Yeah. And you know, we're all on board with Empire, A New Hope,
yeah.
Force Awakens. That's kind of surprising.
But you know
too.
What I will tell you though, depends on my mood. Sometimes I'll flop 4 and 5.
I will throw out that there is no right order. It's all a personal opinion. And everybody can like exactly what they want. And everybody's right. Because
you're wrong about that. Let me tell you why.
Well, I mean, it's like you say, it depends on the day, because 4 is a really good movie, but 4 is really corny. But 4 is the one that 4 is the reason why we're all here tonight talking about this.
Yes,
so that that deserves something. So.
You know what? 4 and 5 are the Alien versus Aliens. It's the Godfather versus Godfather 2.
Yeah.
It's Piranha versus Piranha 2, The Spawning. It's just that.
It's just Police Academy 2 versus Police Academy 3.
Oh, man. Sorry.
Those Police Academy movies, so funny. Man, I used to crack up at those. I love Police Academy. I haven't seen that movie. I'm going to go out and rent that. I'm gonna rent that watch it on Netflix.
No. I'm sorry. Part 7, it kind of loses me at Part 7.
You can go to Crackle.com right now, which is a free streaming service. It's like a Netflix, but it's totally free. Crackle.com. It's run by Sony, and all 7 Police Academy movies are there right now for you.
All right.
Guys, I'm out of here.
All right. Scott and I have to be somewhere. See you later. Guys, we gotta talk about our sponsor for this week's show, guys. Audible.com is our show sponsor, and we are so thrilled.
Other person talking again.
We keep away from her, man. Keep away from her, man. For you, the listeners of the Wretched Hive podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial so you can check it out and see what you think of their service. If you would like to check out one of the many Star Wars books, you can do so for free with your free download. And the one we've got to debut for you tonight is Star Wars Aftermath Life Debt by Chuck Wendig and read by Mark Thompson. Check this out.
As such, the ground is rough beneath him. It bites through the thin cloth. It abrades. But he does not bleed, because his feet are tough, even if many think him weak. Clouds of dust kick up with every step. Scree hisses across rock. The boy is chasing something. A pair of streaking contrails bisecting the dead sky.
So Star Wars Aftermath Life Debt. You know, this Aftermath series, the first Aftermath book kind of took some hits, kind of got panned a little bit. I started it and couldn't stick with it. I have a short attention span, but it just was jumping all over the place and not making a lot of sense. But I'm hearing good things about Aftermath Life Debt.
I am reading it now.
Oh, good. Okay.
I hope to have it finished for the next podcast so I can give a full review. I will say this as a partial review halfway through. If you have the Millennium Falcon on the cover of your book, Han Solo needs to show up before page 200. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Duly noted. And if you would like to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/hive. Again, that's audibletrial.com/hive, H-I-V-E, for your free audiobook. And it doesn't have to be a Star Wars book, by the way. You can
download. I just finished an Audible book, Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
How was that?
Oh, fantastic. I love Gaiman's work, and it's a parody satire of Armageddon, the biblical Armageddon. It's absolutely fantastic.
Terry Pratchett, famous fantasy sci-fi writer. Did he write any of the prequel novels, any of the adaptations? Did he do any of those?
I think that was Terry Brooks.
Terry Brooks did.
Terry Brooks. One. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Gaiman is amazing.
So many Terrys in the world of fiction.
Sci-fi. It's crazy. Yeah. So,
Gaiman is a stud, yes.
Yeah. Side note on this, sorry. There is a story that he wrote years and years ago based off of his Sandman series called Death, The High Cost of Living.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic story, short miniseries. I highly recommend picking it up.
Nice. Or you can go out and read his novel, American Gods, which is, I think, going to be a TV series, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
That is.
Gillian Anderson is one of the actresses that will be in American Gods.
That's right. Nice. That's right.
And you know what? Better yet, instead of going out and picking it up, why don't you go seek it out on audible.com?
Pick it up for free right now. We've got some other news, a couple of other stories wanted to cover here, guys. We have a rumor about the young Lando Calrissian.
Yes.
Actor Donald Glover. Or
Thank
G. Lover.
Napoleon Dynamite in the background.
Shut up. Donald Glover being rumored to be the leading candidate to play the young Lando Calrissian, presumably alongside Alden Ehrenreich as the young Han Solo. And I'm looking at Yahoo Celebrity, a story from Entertainment Weekly, who is quoting, actually, Donald Glover, is saying, "Yep, there are rumors." Donald Glover told Time, avoiding mention of any casting talks with Lucasfilm. He added, "I mean, I grew up on Star Wars. My dad was a big fan. I had all the toys when I was little. I had a Darth Vader with a lightsaber he has. It was cool. It's a dynasty. It's like the Bible. I love that franchise.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an interesting, you know, non-answer to the question. He talks about how much he loves it without really saying one way or the other if anything is or isn't going on, which suggests to me that something's going on.
I also love the casting of Donald Glover. If anybody has seen his work on Community, he's a great young actor. I think he'd pair well with this Alden Ehrenreich kid. I'm so on board with this. I couldn't be more on board with this.
The whole concept of Han and Lando having some kind of like lethal weapon-esque buddy cop thing going on, I just from the Zahn books, which I know are not continuity, but we never really got in the movies to see that friendship Han talked about between him and Lando. They were at odds in Empire, with Lando being forced with the betrayal, and then in Jedi they were really, you know, they were separated for most of the movie. So in the Zahn books really kind of explored and had Han and Lando off doing their own thing and their own little escapades together for a while, and it was fantastic watching those characters banter back and forth and work off of each other and leverage each other's strengths and weaknesses and paranoia. I would just kill to see that on screen. I'm so excited about this rumor.
Yeah, same here, Dave, and I agree. I couldn't agree more with you than on that excuse me, Cameron, Justin. I couldn't agree
just
more.
Shift him to the left side, Scott.
This chair just went crazy. I don't know what happened. I think I have cats attacking my setup here. I couldn't agree more on the dynamic between those two characters in the Zahn books. What a great idea to bring this guy in. And I'm hoping that what's his name?
Alden Ehrenreich?
Yeah. Alden. Sorry, I've got distractions here. I've got suddenly cats everywhere attacking me. It's crazy. I don't know what's going on, guys. The dynamic between those two I think would be great to see on screen. So what a wonderful bit of casting. Community is a great show. It will be interesting if this pans out to be true.
Yeah, I love these rumors. You know, this actor, you start to think about the character and the look of the actor and what might be, and it's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool because I mean, he could totally pull it off, just judging by his look and, you know, what he's done in the past. It seems like a really good fit.
Agreed.
Like it a lot.
Yep. So if this is true, the latest in a great series of moves by Disney. Right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yep. Thumbs up.
Agreed.
Thumbs up.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yep. Guys, we did have a little bit of Rogue One news. Let's talk about it.
For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic.
It's grounded, like a lot of subject views of what it's like to be really in a war in the Star Wars universe.
Attacking that battle station ain't my idea of courage. It's more like suicide.
Resistance fighters unite for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans and bring new hope to the galaxy.
Rogue One Reconnaissance.
Rogue One Reconnaissance. Request one round elimination ASAP. Roger, stand one round elimination. Stand by.
Gareth Edwards is talking about a little bit more about Rogue One, and he's quoted on this story on EmpireOnline.com talking about the meaning of the title. Which at one point he says he didn't know what it meant. He was kind of clueless about it. And he says in this article, "I'd been thinking about it," he reflects in the new issue of Empire. "What does it mean? Rogue One is a military call sign to some extent," he adds, referring to Red Squadron during the Battle of Yavin. "But this is the first film that's gone off piste," or is it pieced? "And is
I don't know what that is. Yeah.
"And is not part of the saga or the Anakin story, so it's the Rogue One, you know?" Little British humor there from Gareth.
Little wordplay.
There's potentially another meaning to it too, relating to Felicity Jones' interplanetary gorilla Jyn Erso. She's got a rogue streak, a touch of the Han Solos in her drive to do what's right, regardless of how much shit she has to blow up en route. Quote, "It's kind of describing her as as well in a similar way, says Edwards. It has all the split, multiple meanings that made you feel like it's the right choice. So, Rogue One, what do you think about that title? And is Gareth onto something here? And does he really not know what the title means?
Well, I think it's meant to be kind of nebulous, you know, because it's really... Well, I don't think there was a Rogue One in any of the movies. There was the Rogue Squadron series of books in the extended universe, and then there was a video game, Rogue Squadron 2, for like the Nintendo 64 or something like that, if I remember right. And so I think it got all of the Star Wars nerds all excited because this is Rogue One. This is, you know, this is that. But I don't know if it ever really means anything to the Star Wars universe directly.
Yeah. It is an interesting take that this is the first movie that's out of sequence, and it's the Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, I agree. Greg, you mentioned that about the series. It was a comic book series for a while, Rogue Squadron. So there is a lot of throwback to the original, like what were they? What were the call signs? Red Squadron, Blue, Gold. There's a lot of great character building in those comic books. Dave, did you read any of those Rogue Squadron comics?
I read the first couple issues. I'm not going to lie, they didn't grab me too much. I know I'm in the minority on that, but
yeah.
Weren't they a series of books too? Wasn't there a series of Rogue Squadron books as well, not just comic books?
That's good. If they were,
I'm efforting that.
What's to the Google Mobile.
I'm efforting that. Give me a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I definitely know that they're the comics. I do have the comics in one of my comic long boxes in the garage. I need to pull those back out, do some reading on them. But yeah, they were a fine series enough. I mean, they weren't great, but they were enough to be like great filler material, which I definitely see. I first felt this movie was going to be. It was a filler movie about the story of what happens with the Death Star plans and whatnot. It's very much what I felt the comic kind of represented. But as it gets closer and more material is being released and these trailers are coming out, you look at that title and there's more to it than just, you know, this isn't just this Rogue Squadron. It's this Rogue group. The Rogue One could be referencing, what's her name, Jyn Erso?
Yep. That was my contention a couple of months ago. I think she is Rogue One.
Right. Right. I think that might be the start of something much bigger, which we see later on in the Star Wars universe, which becomes the Squadron, which becomes all these different types of ranks in the X-Wing and the Y-Wing and all that stuff, the Rebel Alliance, basically.
And Greg, you are correct. It was also a series of novels. It looks to be a 10-volume series, which are actually available in a single bundled Kindle edition for $59.99 through Amazon.com.
Oh. Called it.
Nice.
Are
those available at Audible.com by chance?
Hold, please.
All right. Now, ready?
I have to get rid of my Anakin I hate you GIF Google search. Hang on. You're all welcome.
Oh, that's good.
Jar Jar Binks is a complete tool.com. Hayden Christensen can suck butt.com.
You're talking about some bad Star Wars. You know, I should have played the bad Star Wars battle intro for that conversation.
Oh, man.
It's been a while since we heard that.
Some passion on both sides of the fence.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Potter searches for the answer to that question. We can.
There are some available, not all.
Okay.
Excellent.
Well, I thought, being a creative type and enjoying home movies and podcasts and things of that sort, I enjoyed this article that Greg you dropped into the show notes about Hasbro trying something new, using fan made films to introduce new toys for Rogue One.
So Steve, I'm glad you watched it. Scott or Dave, have you guys seen this new video? Because it just came up within the past day or so of the new toy releases that have been put out, that are being put out by Hasbro. And they're not all new, but some of them are new. Have you seen this at all?
They are fantastic.
This little video was great.
Loved it. Whoever did this, they nailed the stop motion better than Tim Burton and his partner there, whatever is that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it incorporates, you know, action figures. It incorporates Legos. It incorporates the little Funko Pop vinyl dolls, all to tell this little story. Apparently, it's a fan-made film. Just really, really, really super fun. Super fun.
I've got it queued up here. Let me play about the first 30 seconds of this this movie. This is Star Wars Go Rogue, Chapter 1 from YouTube. Check it out.
Jen Erso, Alliance Mission Log, 12-16-16. The Empire has misplaced valuable information regarding their latest construction project.
He's found it. What about you?
I can't find it.
Sir, we seem to have lost the building instructions.
What?
Based on our reconnaissance, they have dispatched search teams of all shapes and sizes.
They show stormtroopers of all shapes and sizes, including the Lego figurines, the Funko vinyls, the big 11.5-inch figures, all the stormtroopers. A really cool, really cool way to display these toys, and very, very creative. Very, very well done.
Yeah, it's seeing as this is part one, I'm hearing that there'll be more parts released, not made by the same people. Apparently, they're recruiting several fans to make these films for them. But I'm like, this is really a genius move. Just shows how fun, you know, showing the fun of just Star Wars collecting the toys and everything like that. Yeah. So good on them for trying something different, not just throwing out vomiting out a catalog for everybody to spew all over and trying something a little bit different.
Well, I do love my catalogs for spewing pleasure, but I will say, Greg, these videos were pretty awesome, or this video that I've seen so far. Have there been multiple ones? I've just seen the Jyn Erso one.
Just this first one. This first one.
It's great. The way that they incorporate all, like you said, the Lego figures, Steve, the taller, the whatever, the 8-inch, 7-inch, whatever they are, right, the normal size 3 3/4-inch figures. Wonderful job. Stop motion is brilliant. Who was I mentioning before? Tim Burton and Henry Selick. Couldn't have done this better, seriously.
We had one more story here. Star Wars Episode 8 has filming is wrapped on that film. And the story we all know by now that John Williams has been inked to score Episode 8, which I thought was a little bit interesting that he's starting this process already, if I read this correctly. Because I thought normally he waits till it's pretty late in the process to get started. But I thought it was interesting that somebody out there, John Williams or somebody else, has seen a very early version of Star Wars Episode 8. Just the thought that someone's watching that probably right down the street in Santa Monica.
I'm going to go a little dark on this.
Pretty
Steve.
Amazing.
It's a little late in his process. The guy is getting up there in age. So
are you saying he's almost dead?
Yeah, maybe he wants to get into the studio right away.
He's waving to Kenny Baker, is what you're saying.
Oh my God! Inappropriate.
Wait a minute. Are we breaking news here? Are we breaking news on the show?
I'm saying is, I hope you guys see in the concert real soon here in a week. Everything goes okay. That's all.
I didn't say he was shaking hands with Kenny Baker. I just said he's waving to him. That's all. So
he's just waving. Hey, buddy.
He's waving. He's right over there.
He's waving his conductor wand. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Dave and I will be able to confirm whether he's alive still when we see him conduct this weekend at the Hollywood Bowl.
Nice. Well, I don't know. How far back are your seats at that bowl? Are you sure that's going to be him?
That's a good point. What is this? Is this going to be like Weekend at Bernie's starring John Williams?
Oh, wow.
Well, Lucas could pull that off.
Oh, they're bringing Tarkin back. My God. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's not going to have a hologram like Tupac or Whitney Houston. I mean, it's going to be him.
So, but yeah, but you got it right there. It's because there is somewhere in the Santa Monica, Toluca Lake area, there is a DVD copy of episode 8, you know, sitting in John Williams's DVD player there, right?
Yep.
All we got to do is break into his house and go get it. I know where he's going to be out of the house this Sunday, so I know that much.
Greg, I get the car, man. You meet me up here.
Did we cover the video of the two high school age kids that went out and played Star Wars out in front of John Williams' home? Did we talk about that?
I don't remember if we covered it on the podcast, but that was seriously cool. Heartwarming.
That was pretty cool. So these kids play, and they did it. You know, they're not professionals or anything, but they did a nice job. And he came out of the house and greeted them and talked to them and very grandfatherly sort of affect with them. And it was really cool.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Really neat story.
And that could have gone two different ways. And I'm really glad he came out and was who he was to those kids. Like,
yeah.
Really showed some sincerity and decency to those kids. He could have went all Clint Eastwood on them and thrown a tuba at him or something. I don't know.
Even though apparently he's close to kicking the bucket, it's still he was.
Guy can still nice throw a tuba, man.
It's the very lonely Luke tweet of the week.
Red 5 standing by.
Because if there's something to whine about, you can count on Luke.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Even though he's now an old man.
No!
It just isn't fair.
You know, reading through the past couple weeks of Very Lonely Luke, I didn't have to go back very far. I just went back just to yesterday, actually, because every now and then he brings the funny, but every now and then he speaks the truth. And this is really one that just speaks the truth. It says, from yesterday, August 30th, why did I run away and become a hermit? I saw the true dark side of humanity. I read the comments on a YouTube video. Never again.
There is some breaking Mark Hamill news today before we went on the air to record this.
Oh,
yeah. He has shaved his beard.
What?
Yep. He did shave his beard, but if you follow him on Twitter, he said he mentioned, you know what, I'm just going to have to go back and look it up. Let's just go back and look.
Well, doesn't he say something? He said something like, go ahead, Greg, sorry. Go.
That he is expecting to grow it back for episode 9, something to that effect.
Oh,
so much like Carrie Fisher kind of let slip at Celebration that she is going to be in episode 9, Mark Hamill very similarly with a tweet saying that he also expects to be back, and I can't find it on his page. He posts way too much.
Yeah, he put the video of the beard trimming on Facebook. And said something very similar, like, I haven't seen my beard since May of 2015 and won't have to grow it back until episode 9 or something like that. So,
yeah. Breaking news. We now have two confirmations of cast members for episode 9.
Yeah.
They're quasi confirmations. They're not official confirmations, but they're pretty much confirmed.
Yeah. Go back to the John Williams thing for a second. This guy. If you look at his body of work, and I know we've talked about this, but I'm so excited to see him this weekend. I mean, this guy's a living legend.
You're so excited to look at his body this weekend?
The Steve,
on that note,
trying to bring it back to some decency here.
I can't.
Might be the wrong crowd, Steve.
That's a good point.
I'm really making myself laugh with that comment. I'm sorry, guys.
That's wonderful.
You crack yourself up.
Have you seen him before live?
Never.
I have seen him before live.
Greg, have you seen him?
I have not.
Or his?
My mom shared with me that her and my dad saw him, and I was like, what? Yeah.
Wow.
So are you saying live or alive?
Or his? Have you seen his body, Greg?
I've seen his body.
Body,
Johnny.
it's an amazing experience, and to see him live.
and an amazing body.
Yes.
But to your point about the body of work, I mean, yeah.
Yes.
You look at all the stuff that he's done. I mean, you pick any movie that he's won an Academy Award for, and that would be a career for almost any other composer.
That's right.
And the guy has won, I don't know how many, but it's nominated something like 30 or 40 times or some ridiculous number.
This guy wrote the score for the Sugarland Express, guys.
Yeah. Love that movie. Love that score.
We covered that last time. We know your love of Sugarland Express. In fact, we're going to start a new Sugarland Express cast.
The Wretched Express.
The Wretched Express.
And I think it's more. I may be wrong on this number, but I think it's something more up around 50 nominations. And I don't know how quite you get 50 nominations, but apparently he's done it. So
wasn't this number 50 for Force Awakens? I think.
Yes.
I think so. Yeah.
He's been nominated for 50 nominations. Holy crap!
It's a lot.
Is the Sugarland Express on that list, Scott?
I am not sure. No.
But yeah, he is a legitimate living legend and musical treasure, and I think he's 80 years old. So I'm excited to get to see him again, and it you know, not to be maudlin about it or morbid, but it could be the last, you know, one of the last times he does a public concert. Episode 8 realistically could be the last Star Wars film that he scores.
Could be.
I love his quote when that came out when they announced he was going to do it. He said something to the effect of, "I want to come back and do this because I don't want anybody else to do it." You know, I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, that's a legacy right there, and I totally get what he's saying there. But yeah, it's kind of funny also. I'm a little chapped. How could Sugarland Express not be nominated? Damn it! Wow.
I could not name one piece of music from the Sugarland Express.
Oh, dude, I'm going to hum that shit for you right now. Okay.
I would not. You could hum anything, and I would just be like, "Oh, okay, Sugarland Express."
He's self-plagiarizing, man. It's good. Wow, I did not know this. He won for Fiddler on the Roof. That was his first win.
Okay, I'm going to give you guys the hardest game in the world right now.
Yeah.
To hum the Indiana Jones theme, immediately after, hum the Superman theme.
Ooh.
This is our new podcast, guys. Just 2 hours of us humming into a microphone.
John Williams scores.
Humcast. So I'm looking at his Wikipedia here. So Jaws in 1975 was, he actually also did the Iger sanction Clint Eastwood movie in 1975, but Jaws in 75 looks to be about his 25th or so score that he did. So starting in 1975, he did Family Plot, which is a Hitchcock movie, The Missouri Breaks, Midway, Black Sunday, Star Wars, Close Encounters. By the way, Black Sunday, Star Wars, and Close Encounters were all in 1977. Not a bad year.
There is a story, just to jump in real quick, there's a story I've heard that he was scoring Star Wars first before he did Close Encounters, and Lucas was so excited he played a recording over the phone for his buddy Spielberg, and Spielberg was just silent, and George was like, What didn't you like it? And Steven's like, "No, it's great. I'm just worried he's not gonna have anything good for my movie left when he's done with yours."
Wow. Well, he obviously had nothing to worry about because, holy crap, in 77, he was just getting started of, 15 years of fantastic work after that?
After that, The Fury, Jaws 2, Superman, Dracula, 1941, totally underrated movie, by the way, love 1941.
Great film.
The Empire Strikes Back, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Heartbeats, E.T., I forgot about E.T., Yes, Giorgio, Monsignor, Return of the Jedi, Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Doom, The River, Space Camp, who knew? The Witches of Eastwick, Empire of the Sun, Superman 4, The Accidental Tourist, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Born on the 4th of July, Always, I mean, the list goes on and on. JFK.
Home Alone.
Schindler's List. Incredible.
I'm going to go out and say JFK had a really great, one of those really great tense, you know, almost like 3 Days of the Condor kind of, oh my God, what's going to happen next scores. Really, yeah, just genius.
I own that on CD and absolutely love that score and have played that CD multiple times. And I will go out on the line because I do love John Williams' music quite a bit. But John Williams, I said it before jokingly, but he does have a tendency to self-plagiarize. And if you ever listen to the JFK score, right after you're done, go listen to the Jurassic Park theme and you will hear him rip himself off.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny in a sense, but when you write that much at some point, how else can you make these notes rearranged? Seriously.
You know, I think it was John Barry who did a lot of the early James Bond, I think. Mm-hmm. But then he did Dances with Wolves. And everything he did after Dances with Wolves sounded just like Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
It was eerie.
Yeah.
That was a great score, though.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I agree.
We've also got, of course, episode 8, Ready Player One, he's signed up for, apparently, and Indy 5.
Continuing his tradition of doing every Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've probably read that Ready Player One books, Dave.
I have not. I actually just bought it yesterday.
Okay. I'm curious to see what the movie's going to be like because the book is okay. It gets a lot of cred, but it's very much like Stranger Things, which is on Netflix right now. Now, I really like Stranger Things, but not because it's a great story, but just because it hits kind of all the nostalgia buttons. Yeah. I get the same feeling with Ready Player One. It's not great or memorable, but there's so much nostalgia going on in that it really kind of hits all those feely points for me. So
I see your point, Greg. I have a tendency to like it a little bit more than what you're saying. It is definitely
Ready Player One or Stranger Things.
Ready Player One.
You've read it. Okay.
What's that?
You have read it.
I'm actually in the middle of it.
Okay.
Here's the thing, though. I haven't seen Stranger Things yet. I hear tons of good things about it, all from the nostalgic point of view. But Ready Player One, I see what you're saying. I totally get it. But there is an interesting story there. And I like the story that's underlying through that thing. So,
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what Spielberg does with it.
Yeah, I am too. I'd go see that.
Yeah. Stranger Things was fun. Lots of fun. If you're for a kid growing up in the 70s, Stranger Things hits a home run.
I hear a lot of things like it's a good mixture of what E.T. and what was the J.J. Abrams one? Super 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, so I just described it as Goonies meets Poltergeist. And really what you can do is you can take any 80s kid action movie where it's like a group of kids together and like a supernatural kind of spooky thriller.
Okay.
Combine any of those together and that's your Stranger Things. Okay. What did you say? The Super 8 with the kids,
right.
And E.T. with the kids. Yeah, that fits. Goonies, that fits. Stand By Me, that fits. You know, no. Anything like.
And we're still on this, and I don't want to drag it on too much, but somebody actually gave me a great review of it, and they said it's almost like what Spielberg's Amazing Stories wanted to be. Like it wanted to go a little bit farther and add some of that supernatural element to it.
But written by Stephen King. But,
yeah, I was gonna say Amazing Stories was more of an anthology. I mean, this is just kind of one story. So
Oh, it's not multiple things going on? It's one?
No, it's all one story.
Okay.
It's all one story.
All right.
Yeah, it's not an anthology at all. But good and totally worth your Netflix subscription for that month. Yeah. I think we watched it in a single night. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Highly recommend. That's a good one. Go check it out. Stranger cool. Things.
Mm-hmm. So are we getting to the point where the Disney and Netflix deal is about to kick in? When is that Disney and Netflix deal supposed to kick in, where everything Disney, all of the Disney properties are supposed to show up on Netflix? All of the Marvel, all of the Disney. When is that supposed to kick in? That was a couple months back.
I remember talking about it.
I am curious now because there was conflicting stories of whether everything Disney would show up on there or if they were just going to piece that a little bit at a time. And I'm curious now to see what's going to happen.
I won't be happy until I see Song of the South.
You want to see Song of the South on Netflix, huh?
Damn skimpy.
Racist.
Looking at
Snopes. So from Snopes.com.
Yeah, I got the same link here, Dave.
Starting in September 2016, Netflix will be the exclusive U.S. pay TV home outlet for new Disney movies. What's not true is that Netflix will not be streaming the entire Disney movie collection to customers. So Netflix announced that several notable movie titles would be added to their streaming movie service. While the press release mentioned blockbusters such as Jurassic Park and Spotlight, online readers were most excited about the service's inclusion of new Disney movies in their stream offerings. Unfortunately, this announcement was misinterpreted by several websites in a way that soon led to false rumors holding that the entire Disney film collection would be added to Netflix's streaming service as of September 2016. It's just going to be new stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to Snopes for this. I remember when Snopes was like disproving, you know, this picture was taken from the top of the World Trade Center before the plane crashed into it, and now we're down to this.
That little guy in the parka and the toque.
Yep. Huh. Yep, with the wrong plane flying towards the tower.
So what you're saying is Police Academy is not going to be on Netflix anytime soon.
Damn. Not through this deal.
All right.
Dave, what do you think? Is that me? Does that work? What do you think?
No, Greg, stop trying to be me. It's getting embarrassing.
Guys, I've got one last item of interest to cover with you. And this is a text I received. Oh, what do you got there? Ooh, Star Wars jewelry. Star Wars jewelry. Yes. Nice.
That's good. It brings out your eyes.
Well, Greg, are you trying to be Padme now? What's going on with that choker?
I think that's for Christine.
I think so.
This is a text I received from my buddy Chris. You guys know Chris. Big fan of the show.
Steve, is it from Scotty McDonald?
No. Wrong again.
Scotty, what's up, buddy? You're letting us down. We need some voicemails, man.
As I said, 33% of the time you're correct. Again, you are wrong. But this one, fortunately, Scott, is directed to you, my friend.
No.
He's going to call you out. So my buddy Chris he's kind of obsessive about this show, and he'll write things down or jot them down on his phone when we use incorrect words or when we say things that he disagrees with, and he'll make notes, and he sent me this message. Message says, last week's episode. So Scott says, quote, "Every Marvel movie is the same formula. You have to put the MacGuffin in a doohickey to save the world."
I think that was my quote.
Yeah,
that was
great. Oh, was it? Okay, so he gets you guys confused as well. So Greg and Scott.
Right, that's fine.
So
I get Scott and I confused as well. So
you too.
So he goes on to say, okay, so he's directing this to you, Greg. He says, "He knows you guys are a Star Wars podcast, right? With the same basic plot on repeat mode. Oh, look, we destroyed another Death Star in the nick of time. Good thing that spunky group down on the planet turned off the giant circuit breaker operating the tractor beam force sheets. Oh, it never gets old."
How dare he bring logic that's awesome.
Into our science fiction movie. That's awesome. Before Greg starts, I do want to point out that we are drinking while we're recording this.
Oh, I've used the wrong word to mean something else, and he calls me out on it every time. He's a damn English professor. So anyway, so Greg, what do you say to Chris?
You know, it's anybody who brings up The Force Awakens is exactly like Star Wars: New Hope. I have one thing to say. You're absolutely right. It is the exact same movie, and I still call it the third best out of all the Star Wars movies anyway. So I have no defense for that at all. I just don't. You're absolutely right. I accept your scorn. That's all I'm saying right now.
Chris 1, Greg 0. I'm sorry to do that to you. Chris is still bitter that he lost the DVD contest.
There will be
he
future
deserved
contests.
To lose with comments. Yeah, he deserved to lose with comments like that.
So I had to give him some airtime. Well, it's been a fun show, guys. Episode 18 in the books. And it's been a lot of fun. Lots of Star Wars news still flowing, man. We're going to be here for... We could do this show for years. So long as Skype behaves. Hey, Skype behaved the whole show, by the way.
I'm happy.
Strong.
Yeah, just not the pre-show.
Just not the pre-show. That's right. Well, if you'd like to talk to us about your Skype problems, give us a call. 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. You can find us on iTunes is a great way. We love reading those iTunes reviews. And it helps us too. Give us an iTunes review. Search iTunes podcast section for The Wretched Hive. You can find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. Twitter is another source at WretchHivePod. And if you're looking for something different, go check out Podbean. It's a neat little Podbean, little podcast service. Happens to host our shows. And you can find our page at wretchedhive.podbean.com. So, guys, got a couple weeks to the next show. Final thoughts.
I can't believe you can't see the subtle nuances between Death Stars 1 and 2.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
Starkiller Base is like the Death Star times 1,000.
Yeah, I could clearly see that in The Force Awakens. There was a nice 3D hologram representation of that.
It was like so much bigger.
Hey, can
no,
we...
I know.
That's what she
can
said.
Can we like pause the song and back up like 30 seconds here? I have one more point to make.
Please keep going.
Keep going.
The song's about to end.
We'll figure it out.
The song's about to end.
No, I'll fix it. Don't worry. Just keep talking.
Just back the song up like 30. I'm not gonna continue this thought until you back the song up like 30 seconds.
Oh my god.
All right, God, we're gonna have too close. There we go. All right, Greg, continue.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
This is the best.
Episode 18 is in the books.
So all I could think of during that scene, and it was I don't know if anybody else got it, but if you've seen Team America, when he's talking about, you know, it's like 9/11 times 1,000, all I could hear was that guy is in my head when they show him, there's the Death Star and here's the Star Killer Base, it's like the Death Star times 1,000.
It's so true. So true.
It is.
I don't know if you guys knew about that plot point for The Force Awakens. I did not, if it was out there. But when they started talking about Starkiller Base, I'm like, oh my, you got to be kidding me. It's another Death Star. Are you freaking kidding me?
No, this one, really, guys, this one is like the ultimate weapon. I swear to God.
It's like the Death Star, but look and see how much bigger it is. It's like really big. Really big. No, seriously, it's big. Oh my gosh.
I think he backed the song up more than 30 seconds. You didn't follow my instructions.
No, I did not follow your. We got time to kill. We got an hour. We got 120 to kill now.
So we got at WretchHivePod.
Yeah.
We've got podbean.wretchedhive.com.
Yeah.
We've got a phone number. Somebody call the phone number. Somebody,
yeah.
Please call
the phone. By the way, we did get another voice message. We have not played it yet. I'm holding it.
Now, wait. Can we also direct him to the Facebook page? Because I posted a bunch of really cool videos up there.
Yeah, please.
I am holding it too right now, just so we're all aware of it. I am holding it.
Facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. By the way, there was one other thing I wanted to mention in the last few seconds here. Remember that Scum and Villainy pop-up bar?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's still online. The webpage is still live. Still not accepting reservations, but we're watching that, folks. We're going to make that happen. We want that listener meetup to happen.
Let's do it.
If you go to their Facebook page, there are some angry folks that they haven't announced their dates yet either. So yeah. Just go easy on them. We want them to actually open.
Guys, it's been fun. Another great show. Have a good couple of weeks, and may the Force be with us all.
May the Force be with us.